Today we're going to talk about the axiom of choice. This is one of the most mysterious axioms of set theory, the one that has caused the most confusion and led to the most surprising results. It's a very useful axiom, and it's a very intuitive axiom, but it has very strange consequences. It was first enunciated by Zermelo about 100 years ago or so. Basically, what the axiom of choice says is that if you have a set, then from each subset you could choose an element. It sounds intuitively very plausible, right? You have a set like the real numbers, you grab a subset like the unit interval, and you could pick an element out of that interval. Simple enough. It is not difficult to see that well ordering of a set is closely related to the axiom of choice. For if S is a set that is well ordered by a relation R, then we may let F be a function from the power set of S to S, and it's the function that assigns to each subset of S the perforce unique minimal element of that subset. Okay, so if you have a set that's well ordered, it's easy to pick an element from each subset because you just pick the minimal element. The converse statement is true as well, but its proof is very complicated. We can't talk about it today. Here is a way to specify a well ordering of any countable set, such as the rationals. The method seems artificial, but it has to be. The natural ordering on these sets does not do the job. So let S be a countable set. Let phi from S to the natural numbers be a set theoretic isomorphism, so it's 1 to 1 and onto. If X and Y and S are distinct elements, then we say that X is less than Y if phi of X is less than phi of Y. Remember, the natural numbers certainly have a nice well ordering. And so what you do is you take two elements of the set S, you map each of them to the natural numbers, and you use the ordering there. So this is what mathematicians call pulling back the ordering from the natural numbers to the set S. This creates a strict simple order on S. It is impossible to explicitly give a well ordering of the real numbers, but as a theorem, using the axiom of choice, that any set, including the real numbers, can be well ordered. In section 4.5, we briefly mentioned the continuum hypothesis, that there are no cardinalities strictly between the cardinality of the integers and the cardinality of the continuum, that is, the reals. Call this statement C. In 1938, Gödel showed that C could be added to the axioms of set theory and no contradiction would ensue. That is to say, there is a model for set theory in which the usual axioms of set theory are true, and so is C, the continuum hypothesis. In 1963, Paul Cohen showed that instead, not C could be added to the axioms of set theory and no contradiction would ensue. That is, there is a model for set theory in which the usual axioms of set theory are true, but C is false. In logical terms, we say that the continuum hypothesis is independent of the other axioms. In particular, it is independent of the axiom of choice. The assertion can never be proved as a theorem from the other axioms, nor can its negation be proved. Georg Cantor's inability to resolve the truth or falsity of C was a strong contributing factor to his debilitating mental illness at the end of his life. Sadly, mathematical logic was not sufficiently developed in Cantor's time for him to have been able to understand the ultimate resolution of the problem. There are a number of very standard and useful tools in mathematics that are consequences of the axiom of choice. Now we will talk about two of them. In modern mathematics, especially in algebra, Zorn's lemma plays a central role. It is used to prove the existence of maximal ideals, of bases for vector spaces, and of other maximal sets. We need two pieces of terminology in order to formulate Zorn's lemma. First, if S less than or equal is a partially ordered set, then a chain in S is a subset D in S that is linearly ordered. That is to say, any two elements are comparable. An element U is an upper bound of the chain if D is less than or equal to U for every element D of the chain. A typical enunciation of Zorn's lemma is this. Let S, comma, less than or equal be a non-empty partially ordered set with the property that every chain in S has an upper bound. Then the entire set S has a maximal element, that is, an element M, such that S is less than or equal to M for every S in capital S. Zorn's lemma is equivalent to the axiom of choice. Zorn's lemma is commonly applied in algebra to prove the existence of various objects. For example, it can be used to establish the existence of a basis for any vector space, which we will do in just a minute. So in what follows, a vector space V is a set with notions of addition and scalar multiplication. So you've seen in R2 the plane and R3 space, you've seen those are vector spaces because you have addition and you have scalar multiplication. A set B is a basis for V if any element V in V can be written as A1 B1 plus A2 B2 plus dot 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 plus AK BK for scalars AJ and elements BJ of the space. And we also require that the basis be minimal in size. Proposition: let V be a vector space over the field F, then V has a basis. Proof: let S be the collection of all linearly independent sets in V. Partially order S as follows. If A and B are in S, then A is less than or equal to B if A is a subset of B. Now, each chain clearly has a maximal element or upper bound, since we may simply take the union of all the elements of the chain to get the upper bound. We then apply Zorn's lemma to conclude that the entire collection S has a maximal element. Call that maximal element phi. We claim that phi is a basis for the vector space. If the claim were not true, then there would be an element x in V that is not in the span of phi, but then x may be added to phi, therefore contradicting the maximality of phi, and we conclude, therefore, that phi is the basis that we seek. Likewise, Zorn's lemma is used to establish the existence of maximal ideals in a ring of algebraic closures and of many other basic algebraic constructs. You will learn about these ideas in your course on abstract algebra. The Hausdorff maximality principle is a variant of Zorn's lemma, also commonly used in algebraic applications. And its statement is this: if R is a transitive relation on a set S, then there exists a maximal subset of S which is linearly ordered by R. Hausdorff principle is equivalent to the axiom of choice. Just for fun, we conclude this section with a description of one of the most dramatic paradoxes in mathematics. This paradox stems from the axiom of choice and is called the Banach-Tarski paradox, named after Stefan Banach and Alfred Tarski. A version of this paradox is as follows. It is possible to partition the solid ball in R3 of diameter 1 inch into 7 disjoint pieces in such a way that these 7 disjoint pieces may be reassembled into a life-size replica of the Statue of Liberty. So there's a book by Thomas Yeck on the axiom of choice that has a nice proof of this paradox. And we should note that the paradox fails in dimension 2. It holds in dimension 3 in part because of the complexity of the three-dimensional rotation group, because it's done non-abelian. Of course, the 7 pieces into which we break the unit ball in the Banach-Tarski paradox are extremely pathological. The subject of measure theory was invented in part to rule out sets such as these. Measure theory is another subject like axiomatic set theory in which there are very specific rules limiting the ways in which sets may be created. That's the end of today's lesson. Thank you for listening.